Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy hump day.
Hump day.
Yeah.
Hump day.
Oh, yeah. One time.
Hump day.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. I am the boss sitting here with Dustin the Great, the absent Ally McDeal, not with us tonight, unfortunately, but we are going to attempt to drive this bus and keep it on the road for you for one full hour of nothing but poker talk. A lot of stuff going on in the poker world. We got a very special guest calling in who recently won some poker tournaments at our location here, Best Bet Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to GT Jack.
That's right. Shout out to GT Jack. We're going to have him on in the next segment. So if you want any questions for GT, we're going to find out how he did it, what it took, and what it was like. It was kind of a stacked final table that he prevailed in at our recent $1,500 tournament in Jacksonville. And, you know, as always, there's still some stuff in the news where I feel like we talk about it a lot, but it is exciting. You know, we're coming up to the World Series of Poker.
We're almost there.
We're almost there.
It starts
there.
Today or tomorrow, right?
I think it starts today.
I think the employees event is today. Day one of the employees event is today, and day two is tomorrow.
Yeah. And so far, all I have heard is exactly what we've been saying is if you want to go there, you must be vaccinated to play, so make sure you're on that Clear app. Download everything on the Clear app and register online and set up your account with the whatever it is, Bravo or whatever, and you can just sign up through the kiosks and avoid some of the lines.
So I just looked at event number one, the $500 casino employees event starts tomorrow at 11 a.m., followed by your event, the 25K horse.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
25K horse tomorrow.
Unfortunately, I'm going to miss that 25K horse. I'll be coming in just a little bit late to jump on that horse. I'll be in the following day to play the $1,500 08.
Event number five.
Event number five. That's right. So if you want to know which event I'm winning, that's event number five.
You and I talked about this briefly, but I listened to a podcast recently with Mike the Mouth, and he talked about the reason he sticks to mixed games tournaments is he feels like the cream always rises to the top in mixed games. There's less variance. He said in a big mixed game event, you'll see the same 20 players at the final three tables in every big mixed event. What do you think about that?
It's very true. You know, in the Omaha 8 or better events, the limit Omaha 8 or better events, the mixed games, the horses especially, the 08 mix, Omaha and stud, what happens is, especially these events are so good to play when they get such big fields, you know, during the World Series of Poker, because a lot of people are just going to come in and play everything.
Sure.
So you have a lot of people that aren't as skilled in that specific variant or variants of games, and the cream really does rise to the top because there's more of a separation of good player and bad player, where it seems like everybody's pretty good at No Limit Hold'em these days.
Right. There's also a ton of variance.
Right. A ton of variance. And there's less variance in the 8 or better split games, especially the limit 8 or better split games. But even in the PLO split games, there's less variance. So you have more of an opportunity as a good player to sort of grind it out and make it to the end.
That's really interesting. I find that to be pretty cool. In the Hold'em tournaments, the No Limit Hold'em tournaments, it's kind of like a crapshoot. You're just constantly dodging landmines.
Right.
For your whole stack. You know, from beginning literally till you have the trophy.
And in a limit tournament, every single chip is vital and counts. You know, you'll get down to where the average stack might be five big bets or something like that.
Sure.
And that's very common in a lot of tournaments. So every bet, every chip that you put in the pot is vitally important. So you really have to decide early how you're going to work through the hand. You can't just say, it's not like No Limit where you have, 100 bigs and you say, I'll just see a couple flops here, see what happens.
Call two big blinds off your 50 big stack to see a flop.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't do that when you have five big bets and it's raised to you and you're going to put one of those in now, two little bets. You really have to think about, okay, do I really want to do this or do I need to isolate or – you know, how am I going to proceed after this? So it is different, but the cream does rise in the mixed game formats. And I've always done better in those personally. You know, I've done well in No Limit tournaments as well in the past, but it seems like I always get close and make it into the money in the mixed games or especially just the Limit Omaha 8 or better. So that's what I'm going to do.
The real question is, if you win the 1500, are you going to jump in the 10K Omaha 8 or better on Monday?
I'll have to see. I think I have, unfortunately, a little bit of work to do while I'm in Vegas.
I think they would let you slide. I
think they'd let me slide?
They give you a hall pass. 10K? Yeah.
I've always said that's the event I'm supposed to win is the 10K Omaha 8 or better. But, you know, I'll settle for the 1500 this time.
You just parlay it all the way up to the 50K horse event.
Yeah, and then the main.
Yeah, and then the main. Yeah, no brainer. Easy.
Parlay. Well, if you guys want to, anybody wants to call in and talk to Dustin and I, 641-1010 is the number. Give us a call. Tell us what you're going to do if you're planning to go to Vegas. Or if you're not planning on going to Vegas, if you just want to stay here and take opportunity to play poker where it's not going to be so crazy, right, at one of our poker rooms in Best Bet Jacksonville or Orange Park. Constant action all day, every day. You're going out there also.
I am. I leave Sunday.
Are you good? Do you have a specific thing you're going to play, or are you just going to go out and see what Vegas has to offer?
I have a list of some smaller buy-in tournaments that I want to play. I'm going to stick around the Nugget, the Aria. There's one $600 event at the Rio that I might play. But mostly – I don't like to be super rigid with my schedule out there. I kind of like to, kind of see how I feel from day to day. So I have a list of things that I want to play. And then, if I feel like splashing around, I might get in some other stuff. Mostly I just go out there and play the cash. The cash games are good. We've talked about it a lot on the show. I love the freedom of playing cash games. Come, go, make a stack, go to dinner, come back, make another stack, go to the bar. That's kind of the move.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing worse to me than playing all day in a tournament and either min cashing or bubbling. it's the absolute worst.
It's pretty brutal.
But I do have a list of smaller stuff that I want to play that I might splash around in. I think there's going to be a lot of value. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day. I think there's going to be a lot of value in some of the other property events just because of the vaccination stuff. Like the people that aren't vaccinated that still want to play these events and these series are obviously not going to play at the Rio, but there's events going on all over the city. Every property has a series. So I think there's going to be a lot of value in some of these small to mid buy-in series events off the strip outside of the Rio versus a normal year out there, Because the Nugget, they always have the Grand. The Venetian usually has a series. The Aria always has some stuff. But I think now, this year in particular, those prize pools are going to be a little more inflated due to the unvaccinated population.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, right? So if you want to play where everybody's vaccinated and you can wear a mask optionally, you go to the Rio. If you want to play where people may not be vaccinated and you have to wear a mask, you still have to wear a mask in the state of Nevada, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So everybody at all the other places will be wearing masks and not vaccinated. So where do you go, right? You stay at the Rio? Do you go downtown?
Everything's just a gamble. It's just one big gamble.
Everything's a gamble.
Gamble. Right? I love it.
Life is a gamble.
Yeah, so you can catch me at some of those other properties. I'll be at the Aria. I'll be at the Nugget. I'll be at the Orleans. I'll be around.
So one place I will be staying at least for a couple of nights while I'm there, is Cosmopolitan.
Saw that in the news.
Cosmopolitan, although for some reason I can't find the story right now. Now this is really interesting to me. BlackRock owns Cosmopolitan.
Blackstone.
Blackstone owns Cosmopolitan. They bought it in 2014 for, I think it was $1.7 billion from Deutsche Bank as it was in foreclosure. And now they're trying to sell it for about $5 billion. Then, as this is happening, they sell off everything other than the real estate. So they sell off the operations to MGM.
Right.
For like $1.6 billion. But they're still selling the real estate. It seems like Blackstone doesn't like to be in the operations business. They're just a real estate company that want to own the real estate, and they lease the operations to other companies like MGM. They also own. I guess some people might be really surprised to hear this, but Blackstone also owns Aria, MGM, Bellagio, and another one.
And do they own the operations for all of those?
No.
They own all of the real estate.
They own the real estate, and MGM pays rent on each individual property
okay.
and runs the operations of the casino, the hotel, the bars, the restaurants, everything.
So that's the real way to do it, is just be the landlord. You don't have to take any of the action.
Just to be the landlord.
No swings.
Right. So the question is, right, who's the smart one? Right, I think it's Blackstone.
Gotta be.
I think they got it. They got it right. They just own the real estate. Now, worst case scenario, right? They one day something happens and they said, "All right, that's it. No more gambling in Vegas." So the real estate's probably not going to be worth much either.
Sure,
but the operations are going to be worth less than not much.
Yeah, and if one casino goes bust, you just get another one in there. You already have the place; it's already built out. You just move somebody else in.
Right.
You just
right.
change, you can't the, pay change your rent. The face.
All right, get out. Get
change the
else
face in. A little bit. Move somebody else in, and get your $200 million annual or whatever the Cosmo was paying.
It's $200 million. That's what the rent is for MGM to pay Cosmo is $200 million.
That's insane. That's the real way to do it. It's just be the landlord. Yeah,
interesting, huh? And you know it works out for MGM also. They want more liquid. To be able to do things in other areas and other states and other parts of the world. So they sell the real estate, lease the operation, and everybody's happy.
The Cosmo is such a beautiful property also.
It's a beautiful place to stay. And I've said this before, you know, it's so unique and cool because it wasn't originally supposed to be a casino. It was supposed to be, or a hotel. It was supposed to be condos. That were owned, so people right. are going to own those. So they have a different layout, right? They have like a one bedroom, they have balconies, so it makes it a very cool and unique place to stay. But well, we're going to take our first break. We're going to come back and talk to GT Jack Sumner and see how he navigated through a very stacked final table at Best Bet Jacksonville to take down our most recent tournament right here on the Best Bet Poker Show.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
There we are. We're back.
All right, we're back. We're back. I'm back. Sorry, I was, I was here. I was here all along. All right, we're back. This is the Best Bet Poker Show right here at 1010XL. 92.5 FM, all things poker, every Wednesday from 6 to 7. And we have a very special guest who recently won a big tournament in our room, which I can't seem to find right now, with a stacked final table. Let's just bring him in. Before we bring him in, we've had GT on before. It's GT Jack Sumner, and I think he's been on before, and I think the last time we had him, he had just won a tournament somewhere.
Sounds right. Checks out.
Sounds about right. So he's also a member of the Slum Donkeys, right? Slum Donkeys?
That's right.
Yeah.
Slum Donkeys. Everybody's trying to be a Slum Donkey. Slum Donkey Millionaires. Is that how it goes? Anyway, let's bring in Jack. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Good to see you, boss man, Dustin.
Hey, buddy.
So I heard, Jack, yeah. But before, I want to hear about this final table and how it went. And I'm reading your email here. Pretty epic, some tough decisions. And obviously, we had a stacked table with David Jackson, Eddie Marskowski, and a few others. But you weren't even supposed to play this tournament, were you, Jack?
Yeah, no, it's a funny story. I had plans for the weekend, but I was free Friday night, and I just wanted to play poker. And so there was a satellite, and I went and played. So I played the $280 satellite, won the seat. And, you know, I've seen folks transfer tickets before, so I was out there trying to transfer the ticket, and I was talking to Dustin. Dustin's like, no, those are tickets won in high hands. You can't transfer a satellite seat. So all of a sudden, here I have this $1,500 seat I just won, and I can't get rid of it. And now I have to either change my plans or play the tournament or not play the tournament. And, of course, I chose to play the tournament. Glad I did.
Well, I think you made a wise choice, Jack.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm really glad it worked out so well for you. That was the first thing I thought about when I saw the results Sunday night.
Yeah, that was crazy. I just shout out, boss man, to you. Super well run poker room, best bet. Arlie, Gus, Johnny, Adonis, Dustin, just best bet live. Just phenomenal room, and I just think one of the best. I've played in a lot of poker rooms, and I love my hometown poker room.
Well, awesome. Thanks, Jack. We appreciate it. And obviously we love all you guys and appreciate the action. So tell us how it started out. You get to the final table and you look and you're fortunate enough that you have the chip leader, who's not only the chip leader, but he's an extremely aggressive and very good player in David Jackson on your right. Take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, my best run good moment is when I drew seats and I was on David's left, and I would say that David Jackson is the best tournament poker player in Jacksonville, if you exclude Sean Winter, who came out of Jacksonville as well.
Sure, yeah, that's fair.
Super talented pro, and I went into this actually second in chips, but David had a massive chip lead. He started the table with 906,000 in chips. I had 530, and that put me in a strong second chip position because five of the other players on the table had 150K or less. So I went in with a conscious game plan, being very conscious of ICM implications, independent chip model. I did not want to lose my position as second in chips. There's a lot of money at stake. There's a lot of short stacks, and I don't want to go out eight with all these short stacks. So my game plan was not to get in a confrontation with David, and I wanted to maintain a healthy chip lead. And as a result, if you for those who watch the stream, David pushed me around early, and I let him, and that was part of my game plan. I'll give you a couple examples. Early on, David raised on the button. I looked down in a small blind. I had ace-jack suited. And in any other spot, in many other spots, that's a hand I'm going to three-bet right there. But I just don't want to get in a big pot confrontation with David. He's a good player. He's got the chip lead, and there's a lot of short stacks. So I just called. Flop came jack high. Again, another spot where I should be taking the lead and aggressively playing my hand now that I got top pair, top kicker. I check. David bet, and rather than raise, I just called, play it safe. The turn was a king. David bet, and I just folded. Didn't even think twice about it, even though I knew and confirmed later when I watched the stream that he was on pure air. He had eight high, but I just didn't want to get in a confrontation with him. And a similar spot, not too much later on, I had pocket jacks, just called him. Flop came ace high. He bet. C-bet, and I just folded. Again, I just didn't want to get in a confrontation. I wanted to protect my stack.
Now you said with the ace-jack hand that, as it turns out, he did not have anything. He only had eight high?
Yeah, when I watched the stream back to see, sure. He absolutely was bluffing me, and he should be. He was playing good big stack poker on a final table, putting ICM pressure on me, knowing that he can pressure me, and I knew very well I was going to let him do that.
So, GT, one of my favorite hands was the hand where you flopped the set of eights. Can you talk about that hand?
Yeah, well, this was the first situation where David's putting pressure on me, but now I had a hand that I could actually play back on, and it was real interesting. This gave me the chip lead, and so this hand started out. I was under the gun and was able to. I'm first to act basically, and I got pocket eights, and David is in the big blind. And part of my plan, keep the pot small, and he's going to defend his blind. So I just actually under the gun limp, and it folded around to David, and he checked. So we got to see a flop, and I kept the pot small, and that was part of the plan. And then the flop came 8-7-3, one heart. And so I flopped top set. Now, at this point, when David starts to put pressure on me, this is the hand where I will go broke if it's just unfortunate luck. But I'm not going to necessarily fold this hand. But I checked, and David checked, and the turn came the seven of hearts. Well, now that gave me the full house, and David came out firing for about 85K. And, you know, I did see the hearts. I immediately saw the flush draw. And in the back of my mind, I was like, please have a hard draw. Please have a hard draw. and so I'm never going to raise him there. I just smooth called the 85K. And lo and behold, here comes the river six of hearts. And I didn't know it at the time, obviously, but I had hoped David had made a flush. And I basically had 550K in my stack at that point, and the pot was 250K, and he fired out a big bet. He fired 255K. Of course, inside my head, you know, fireworks are going off, celebration. How can I raise here and look weak? It's hard to do that, honestly, in that spot, but his sizing surprised me. It was really big. To call the 255K is half my stack, and obviously with the full house I was going to raise. So
sure.
It was an easy all-in, and he pretty much quickly folded. But that gave me the chip lead and sort of turned the tournament around a little bit. Now I'm the chip leader, and I can start to apply ICM pressure on him.
Now, if I'm keeping track roughly, it sounds like you have a massive chip lead, right?
Yeah, I was over a million at this point.
Sure. There's
only 2.6 million in play.
Yeah, and David's just taking a big hit. So now David's roughly around like the 600K mark, the 500K mark. So you guys effectively just kind of flip spots.
Exactly. And,
wow.
You know, it was a great hand. That's what you want on a final table, right? To run in that spot. David was running pure too, but I was minimizing my interaction with him until this big hand happened.
And definitely that is what you're looking for. And that's your, you know, as you said, the best run good you had at this tournament was really your seat draw about being on his left, because that's what you look for, is an opportunity to double through the big stack, but stay away from not tangle with him on small pots, but, you know, get him trapped in there where he obviously thought he had the best hand on the river. He thought he finally got there. He's thinking, man, I'm bluffing all this time, and I finally get there.
Right.
Make a flush, make a big bet, and get paid off. And there you are sitting there deep in the trap with a big full house.
Yeah, also fold. What a big fold from David.
I was going to say. What a big fold from him.
He's getting, like 3-1 on the river, 2.5-1 on the river or something, and he folds?
Yeah. He doesn't have 2.7 million in winnings and several titles, a gazillion more titles than I do for,
right.
He's a great player. So
yeah. What a big fold on his part.
Yeah. That's a great point. Cause most people are just going to call off there and say, whatever, you got a full house, you win.
Yep.
But, exactly. But not David. He says, I know you have a full house, and that's the way life goes. So I will fold here, but you still had some work to do there. At this point in time, there's still at least five players left. You still got Eddie in there, Patrick,
yeah.
Some other local players. Take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, I will say this about Eddie. He was the short stack most of the final table, and he still came out second. He's another phenomenal pro in Jacksonville. He just maneuvered around all the obstacles and still finished in second. But I had an overwhelming chip lead, and in the hand that I believe really won the tournament for me was a pretty big bluff. Probably one of the bigger bluffs I've ever pulled off in a tournament life, or
really? You
know, a big table with lots of money at stake. But it was basically folded around to David in the small blind, and I was in the big blind. So it was blind on blind, and he just limped. And so I looked down in the big blind and saw I had 3-5. Not the greatest starting hand, but, you know, free flop. Okay, yeah. I checked.
Sure.
The flop came deuce, king, 4. So I basically flopped 2-3-4-5 or an open-ended straight, where an ace or a 5 is going to give me a straight, and an ace or a 6. And so open-ended's pretty strong hand. But David came out firing 20K in the blind level. That was a pretty small bet. So I called that with that open-ended straight draw. And the turn brought a jack, and David checked. And, you know, at this point, every poker player knows they can check for a free chance to hit the draw. But if they check and miss the draw, and then they end up bluffing on the river, it doesn't tell a good story. So the minute he checked the turn, I'm in position. It was a real important setup for me because I'm in position, and he just showed weakness. And so my flop call slowed him down a little bit. My image is still pretty darn tight. And now I can put the ICM pressure on him because he's still second in chips with a ton of short stacks on the table. So, wow.
Not to mention you have no showdown value. You have 5 high. Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I consciously looked at his stack and counted his stack in my head in rough estimations, and I sort of overbet the pot. And I did that intentionally, with every intention of betting the turn, knowing that if I missed, I was gonna bluff the river. It was a check, small blind, big blind hand. There is so many cards I could have that, you know, would be two pair or, even small sets like, you know, pocket deuces or pocket fours, or that's what I had, pocket threes or something like that. So,
your range is really infinite.
Yeah, exactly. So I bet 125K into basically a 100K pot, which put the pot roughly at 350K, and David had about 320K left. So I bet the turn. He called, and the river was a 7 of hearts. So here I am having to execute the bluff plan that I was thinking about. David checked the river, and I just shipped all in, which, you know, it was a lot of money I put in the middle, but ultimately it was just a pot size bet. But more importantly, it was putting him all in with 5 other players with a very small stack, so that I was my turn to apply that ICM pressure.
So we have a 3-6. What was the flop? 3-6?
2-4.
The flop was 2-4.
So I'm sorry. You had the 3-5. The flop was 2-4.
King.
King, and then we had a jack on the turn and a 7 on the river, which brought no flush.
Right. And no straight, and David had queen jack, so he had middle pair. He had a pair of jacks, but there's a king on the board, there's a deuce, a 4, a 7. I'm in the big blind, limp pot. I could have 7 deuce there with 2 pairs. So there's so many things that can beat just a pair of jacks. But I tell you, sitting there for such a long time, and David staring at me, and he was trying little chip tricks to get me to flinch, and I sweated the stare down, but boy, I'm telling you what, I don't like doing that. That wasn't fun, but winning the pot was really fun, because he did end up folding, and that gave me an overwhelming chip lead. And as the fortune of cards would happen, the very next hand, he went all in with ace jack, and I woke up with ace king, and he was gone in 2 hands. And then I had a chip stack that was really dominating for the rest of the short stacks on the table.
Wow. So what did he have there? He had jack and a
queen jack.
We had queen jack.
Queen jack. So middle pair.
He turned the jack or turned middle pair.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah, you know, when you're in that moment and you know you just put a big bluff in, and you know that if they just say the word call, you're done. But if they say fold, you're good, and you have somebody that caliber of player, staring you down like that. It is nerve-wracking. And then when they finally fold, it's such a relief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was really my rounders moment where, you know, in the movie, Matt Damon, you know, bluffs Johnny Chan. It's like, this was my chance to go against a pro. I'm an amateur. I'm not a pro. I don't do this for a living. So that was my moment. And it was a blast. I'll remember that for a very long time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, great run, Jack. Very impressive. Great job. Stacked field. Congratulations to you, to Eddie, to John Patrick, David William, even Dennis making the final table. Great job, Dennis, and everybody else that made the money. It was a good tournament. The September Sizzler. We'll look to see you in the winner's circle final table again here in October.
I hope I plan to be there. Thanks again for all you do to bring a great community of poker to Jacksonville.
All right, Jack. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, buddy.
With that, bye-bye. We are going to take our next break, and we'll be right back on the Best Bet Poker Show.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. I am Jesse the Boss, sitting here with Dustin the Great.
That's right.
We're on the line. We got Country in the booth, keeping it together. Trying to hold things together while the one and only Allie McDeal cannot be with us here this evening, unfortunately. But that's okay. You know, we had a good conversation there with GT Jack, and I want to bring up a few things that he talked about and did at that final table. As he said, you know, the biggest advantage for him was to be on the left of the player with the chip lead. Huge positional advantage. I mean, if he would have been on the other side of David in this case, it'll change his strategy around drastically. So his strategy going in was to play small ball poker. There was a lot of people who started the final table without many chips. So he was second in chips, but still significantly less than first place when they started the final table.
Yeah, and there is also something to be said for when you have short stacks on your left, because they can really handcuff your play and make your life really miserable too, because they can just rip on you, you know?
Yeah, the short stacks tend to only have one play. So if you're in there trying to play lots of hands, putting in small bets, and every time you put in a bet, the short stack goes all in and you're forced to fold.
Right.
They can bleed you down a little bit. So his strategy was to keep it light and not get involved with David very much. Here's the one flaw in his strategy that I see is, although you may not want to get involved, you really don't have a choice because, you know, as we said, David Jackson's a great player. He's involved in a lot of hands. So you're going to have to play a hand at some point. But I do like the strategy. And the ICM implications are, you know, at eight players, eighth place out gets $4,500. But first place was they did make a deal. We didn't need to talk to Jack about the deal. They did make a deal first, second, and third for $34,000, $30,000, and $18,000 respectively. So first place must have been originally closer to 40 range.
I think first place was 39. I really think the guy who made out in this deal was probably the third place guy. It sounds like he got a little bit of a deal. I don't remember what third place money was, but
so it was definitely less than 18,
right?
Because they did some sort of chop at three handed. But that being said, you know, when there's eight players left, the next person out is going to get $4,500, but first place is going to get almost $40,000. That's what you have to think about in the tournament. Obviously, you want to get first place, and you need to get all the chips to win first place. So that is a piece of it also. But with you don't happen to have the chip counts, do you, right there?
I don't.
So when they started out, as Jack said, a bunch of people had about $150,000. He had, I think, in the $500,000 or $600,000 range, where David Jackson at the time had about $900,000.
Yeah, GT Jack had about 530. David had just over 9.
So what that means is there's the players who are short are going to want to not really, typically what they do is they don't play any hands so they can move up the ladder, where eighth place was 4,500. Seventh place was almost $1,000 more, 5,400.
You know, and I think
it's a lot of money.
I think that's counterintuitive. I think when you are the short stack and you already have the money locked up, I think you should be gambling a little more. I think all you can do is make more money. You can never lose any more money in that spot.
And that's very true.
I think people do it incorrectly, and they kind of do it backwards, where they try to tighten up and just go, ooh, if I can just outlast this one guy,
right,
I can ladder up a spot, or maybe these two guys will get in a big hand and knock each other out or something. But it should be the other way around. You've already locked up the money. You can't lose any more than eighth place money, you know? You should be getting it in there and gambling.
And that's a very good point. And I think you're right. Most people think about it the opposite. If I just sit here and blind off, maybe I'll move up a couple spots if people get knocked out.
Yeah, but you're never going to get enough chips to win in that spot.
You're never going to get enough chips to win.
Especially when you start losing more players, and with the big blind ante structure, you know, all of a sudden you get down to six-handed and you owe 3.5, or what is it? You owe 2.5 big blinds every orbit. You know, you're going to get smoked.
True.
So you got to gamble. Got to get in there and gamble.
You got to get in there and gamble. So yeah. I like it. I like to be a little bit more aggressive. Also, when I'm the short stack, I tend to play, if I'm the short stack in that spot and there are ICM implications, I play extremely aggressive. I do play tight and not passive, though, very aggressive and situational. You know, if somebody limps and they're one of the shorter stacks and it looks like they're trying to see a flop cheap, and I have any hand that I'm going to play, I make a big raise or go all in, because I feel like they just are trying to get in cheap.
Yeah, of course.
And play. And I don't want to play. I just want to pick up whatever's in the middle every single time. So I make big raises.
So really the most aggressive spots that you should have at the final table should be the really big stacks, who should be applying pressure to the small stacks and even taking shots. If you have 50 bigs and, you know, you raise and a guy goes in for 8, you know, you should be taking shots at these guys trying to eliminate them. And then the small stacks, they should be the more aggressives. Everyone in the middle of the pack should just kind of chill and try to ladder up, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. You have more pressure actually being in one of those middle stacks, because what do, right? But the problem with being a short stack and being too aggressive is it's too easy for the big stack just to play a hand with you and call a marginal situation and then knock you out.
Sure.
You want people to have lots of fold equity at the end there, when you can just pick up the blinds and annies, it really means a lot.
Fair.
Eventually you sort of need to get, you know, if you let your chips get too small and you're under 10 bigs and, you know, you got 6 bigs or something like that, you really need to get called. Otherwise you're never going to catch up.
Right.
So it doesn't matter at that point, but then you have to make sure that you have a hand that can beat a lot of hands.
Right.
Right.
Your stack goes down, your fold equity needs to increase.
Right.
As your stack size decreases, fold equity needs to increase, because it's going to be a showdown driven hand. It's going to go to showdown.
Correct. And if you're going to go to showdown, you need to be able to have a hand that plays well, just going all in.
Right. You can't just get it in with 10-3 suited in that spot.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, there's a lot to be said for not even playing the 7-8 suited and 8-9 suited.
Yeah, 100%.
You can't even beat a guy that randomly calls you with a King-8.
Right.
You know, or yeah, a King-Deuce.
Almost drawn dead.
Right, you're almost drawn dead to somebody that calls you with a random King-High. So you want to have big cards and stuff like that when you get short stacked. But now, you know, in Jack's situation, when you turn the tables and now you can put the pressure on everybody else, and when there are still short stacks at the table, you can really pick on those middle stack guys, because they don't want to get involved because they're waiting for the short stack to get knocked out.
Right.
So like you said, you know, we put the pressure on the middle stack. So when it's your opportunity, that's what you need to look for. It's really important to keep an eye on everybody's stack size, ICM implications, and what type of player they are. You know, if you're playing against somebody like Eddie Marskowski, who's one of the best I've ever seen maneuver a stack through a tournament, he doesn't really need to have a big stack or a small stack. He knows how many chips everybody has. He knows what the ICM implications are. And he knows when to be overly aggressive and when to be passive. Where if you have somebody and it's their, you know, maybe their first time at the final table or they're not a very experienced player, they're probably more inclined to be incredibly passive with a short stack just so they can move up the ladder.
Yep.
And if I know that and Dustin knows that and I have a big stack and Dustin has a medium stack, I can put pressure on Dustin because he knows the other guy is just trying to ladder up really quick and isn't going to be playing any hands. So he can therefore also put pressure on that player. It's sort of a weird...
It's like a leverage situation.
It's definitely a leverage situation.
That was one of my favorite things that GT Jack said about the hand where he went all in for the 300K on the river as a bluff. In that spot, he put the leverage on David because David doesn't want to bust in that spot. The difference between... You know, the next three pay spots was like 6K. From sixth place up to fourth place, there was almost a 5K, 5.5K difference. So David not busting out in that spot was way more important, and Jack used that to his advantage, put the pressure on David.
Right, absolutely. Even though, in the end, David picked up a big hand and was eliminated the next hand, but
yeah,
he...
Just a cooler.
Yeah. He's obviously thinking about the ICM implications in that spot and that he's better off folding and saving some chips and looking for a better spot, which he found. Unfortunately, it didn't work out so well. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we got some stuff to give away. What should we give away? Do you have anything in particular?
Yeah.
I got to make it up.
No, we'll... I think today is a $50 tournament voucher.
I like it. Well, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, we'll give away a $50 tournament voucher. Talk all things promotions right here on the Best Bet Poker Show.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, we are back. This is the Best Bet Poker Show. Let's take the fourth caller, 641-1010. Fourth caller wins a $50 tournament voucher. You can get in there and use that $50 and be like GT Jack and take down $30,000, $40,000. That's the way to roll. 641-1010 is the number. Caller number four. In the meantime, what do we got going on? We got a $10,000 day at Orange Park coming up on the 2nd. 500 the first half, first 20, 200 the second 20, 500, 300, 200 every hour. How's that?
Yeah, I like it.
That's Saturday the 2nd. If you like what we did yesterday, both rooms combined shared promotion, $1,000 every hour with $100 table share. We're doing it again next Wednesday the 6th. We also have lots of tournaments coming up. We have the GoPro coming up at Orange Park. You can use that $50 voucher to help out getting one of the satellites. That's going to be on the 16th of October. We also got the October Fall Frenzy is back Saturday the 9th. we have a $600 no limit hold'em. And then on the 12th, we'll do a $1,500 no limit hold'em, very similar to the one we just had with the final table playing. That's on the 23rd. Final table playing out on the 24th. Follow us at bestbetjacks.com for all the information. All that information, check us out on the website. Follow us on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook. Don't forget there is a live stream tonight. Dustin, what do we got?
Playing 2-2, no limit, deep stack cash tonight. 100 men, $500 max. It's going to be juicy.
You heard it. Stay right here on Twitch to check that out. Also YouTube. And that's it. We made it. Another hour of the Best Bet Poker Show. We'll see you again next week. So for myself, the boss, Dustin the Great, absent Allie McDeal, country in the booth. See you next week on the Best Bet Poker Show. Stay with me. I love it.